There is so much stuff in this text that just simply cannot be addressed in a sermon. A lot of the background information to the importance of the well, for example, long discussions about the conflict between Israelites and Samaritans, the echoes from Old Testament texts that appear in this passage, particularly those with living water, as well as the passages that I skipped over with food. What we want to focus on today in light of the series that we're in is the reality of a conversation and what unfolds when a person has a conversation with Jesus. What unfolds when they have an encounter with Him? What directions do they take? What is being explained? What is it that Jesus is trying to get at in the midst of the conversation? We want to really flesh that out such that we begin to see why these conversations are so important. And we do so in light of the fact that faith, it seems to me, unfolds more often in the midst of a conversation between two people than it does a scientific examination of things, or even a great sermon. It's the one-on-one conversation of someone who believes and someone who does not, and what can happen in the midst of that respectful yet truth-telling conversation. Now, this is a fascinating text, not least of which is that Jesus went through Samaria. All I'll say about Jews and Samaritans is that they pretty much believed the same things. They held to the same Torah. They have different backgrounds. Samaritans came out of the divided kingdom in the north, but to make a long story short, they parted ways and saw each other as unclean and not worthy of intermarriage, not worthy of worshiping together. Those in Jerusalem, in Judea, worshiped in Jerusalem. Those in Samaria worshiped on Mount Gerizim. And it's almost like modern day Northern Ireland. You have Protestants and Catholics opening the same Bible, and yet severe hatred and violence and refusal to associate with one another. So, in this time, the normal route to get to Galilee from Judea had to go through Samaria, but Jews didn't take the time to go through there. They wouldn't dirty themselves by doing so. They would walk around it. Jesus goes through it. And goes right through it, probably for a purpose. He's a very intent person to, as you see in the Gospel of John, nothing is haphazard. Nothing is simply, you know, I just feel led to do this today. More so there's a purpose to do something today. And he goes to this place where, again, there's a big history with this well, but nonetheless, it's, again, a shared Old Testament experience between those in the Jews as well as the Samaritans. They have the same text to talk about Jacob, the well given to son Joseph. It was about noon is where we get some clues that's going on. You don't draw water at noon. You don't draw water at the heat of the day. Gets you the first clue in the text that says that a woman in a well that's actually much farther from the city than a much closer well is a woman who in the midst of her own community is not well revered at all. Likely an outcast. Someone who had to go, that we would draw water together, she went by herself in the heat of the day, and as such would be, again, an outcast woman of the community. But Jesus doesn't look at it this way. He comes to her and asks her something. He says, give me a drink, which completely shocks her. For she knows he's a Jew and she's a Samaritan woman. That alone was a no-no. It's really hard to get our minds wrapped around this, but the hatred was such that not here, but later on in the first century, there was actually a decree from Jewish authorities to consider a Samaritan woman as perennially unclean, always not worthy to be associated with or touch, such that even if they touched a vessel of water and gave it to you, it would be ceremonial unclean. I mean, it just went to ridiculous levels of hatred. Jesus says, pass me a glass of water to her. He's showing here deep deference and respect such that she is shocked in the conversation, which gives us the first clue in which we look at what a conversation with Jesus looks like. He meets someone where they are, and he shows them the dignity and respect that no one else has given them. Do you think he had her ear by then? Yeah. To not only have such a divide between Jews and Samaritans, but to also have this divide between her and her own community is remarkable. Jesus goes above and beyond that. He shows her dignity in the midst of this conversation. And again, it should be calling to us in the midst of our own conversations to give the dignity and respect to someone so that they might hear. And the conversation unfolds about water and living water. And again, just like Nicodemus asked the other day, how can I go back into the womb and be born again? She's doing the same thing here. You know what? This would be great if I didn't have to keep coming to the well at the heat of the day when no one's around. I'd love to have some living water. Again, Jesus has to begin to explain that he's talking about something far deeper than your day-to-day realities. Which again is the second thing to be said here. The first one is the dignity with which Jesus gives someone. The second piece is that we are enamored with, we might say, earthly or carnal things, right? Today we're tired or we're frustrated, we're thinking about finances, we're thinking about what we have to do in our job next week, we're thinking about the things that need to be attended to at home, we're thinking about things that have frustrated us with our dealings with people, but the kind of the deeper things of life, of love and of faith and of truth are often suppressed for the immediacy of the moment of the earthly things that we are absorbed by. And a conversation with Jesus that unfolds from the dignity with which he approaches us always, it seems to me, follows a push by him to get us to think about deeper things. Is that if the way in which he's going to interact in our life is just kind of smooth out all of the irritating pieces of our earthly frustrations, we're not going to really touch the thing that needs to be touched most. Who we are inside, not the circumstances that we find ourselves in. Jesus wants to change her on the inside when all she's thinking about is water. He's saying, I want to change who you are. You are. Which should give us pause here to begin to thinking about the degrees to which the circumstances of our day-to-day lives often become an excuse for us to not pay attention to deeper things. Who am I? What do I believe? How do I behave when things don't go my way? What are my weaknesses when they present themselves in the form of temptations? What is it that I hold on to dearly when, truthfully, if I look at it in light of who Jesus is, it's just a bunch of dust, not worthy of the amount of anxious energy I give to it. We have to have these conversations with ourselves. And he's going to tell us, you're talking about water, I'm talking about living water. really important. But he stays in the conversation. Then it takes a shift. Third piece here. He tells her to do something he knows is not the real deal. He says, go call your husband and come back. He already knows the answer to this question. But it's almost like he's picking at a scab here. And she goes, I have no husband. He's like, yeah, you're right. Guess what else? You've had five. And the one you're with now is not your husband. The one you're living with now is not your husband. What you said is quite true. It's a pretty direct conversation. Very much intending to expose here. But the text, thankfully, doesn't allow us to draw simple conclusions. In terms of a woman at this time, the ability to kind of just drop husbands and get new ones was not something they had the power to do. Men could do that left and right for whatever reason they felt was appropriate. We don't know her story. We don't know to what degree she had been maybe poorly treated by men in her life. We don't know to what degree some of these husbands of hers may have died in the grief she had gone through during that time. We don't know the entirety of the story at all. And Jesus is not interested in having a conversation, though, about the past. What he is saying is right here, right now, I know who you are. I know everything there is about you. But he brings up the question here. Let's talk about the present. The present right here and right now is such that you are in violation of the law of the Lord. So despite where she's been or the cause of it, what he wants to address right here and right now is who she is. And he's putting his finger on something that would have caused guilt. But he does so for a purpose in order to change her. It's an important thing for us to think about. My boys have befriended a young boy in the community at play at the skate park, and it's a kid who is quite different in my home than he is at the skate park. And over the time that I've been kind of trying to be a good adult for him, feeding him a lot of food and has a tough home life, it's kind of emerged that he doesn't have a relationship with his father anymore because his father was abusive to him. And it began to see, you kind of see why he is the way that he is. However, I'm still intent in my home to hope that he changes. And he's making good progress. He just seems to be at peace and he's more respectful in my house than my boys are. And so this is what Jesus is like. He understands the raw material of who he's dealing with. But he has every intent in taking what he's dealing with and changing it, not leaving it as it is. And to change what is requires the ability to tell the truth and to say it clearly and decisively, to name it. He names it. And you can tell it struck a chord because she evades. I don't know if you noticed that. He just poked at her and said, yeah, you know what, you're right. You've had five husbands. The one you're living with now is not your husband. She goes, our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, Mount Gerizim, and the Jews claim the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem. What did she just bring up to the surface here? A fight that's been going on for at least 200 years. You can imagine the first thing coming out between a religious fight between a Samaritan and a Jew is, where do you worship? Well, we worship in Gerizim. False. You should be worshiping in Jerusalem. She picks a fight. This tough girl. And goads him back. He's pressed the right button here. And again, the fourth thing that might be said here is this very thing, is that when the truth comes to us, our natural temptation is to evade. But what about this? Distract. What about this? Maybe direct the anger elsewhere so it won't be coming towards ourselves. Jesus doesn't let her evade it. Are we the kind of people when truth is named to us that we evade? We should not. And Jesus' response to her is just brilliant. He's like, yeah, okay. He's really claiming the priority of the Jewish understanding of the Old Testament text over the Samaritan one, saying, we worship what we know, you worship what you don't know. There's been a divide. But you know what? Let's not get too caught up into which mountain we're going to really find God's presence on, because time is coming, and guess what? Time is right now when worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, which is a shocking claim, because he's saying, guess what? God's presence is not going to be found on Mount Gerizim or Jerusalem anymore. Worship will happen throughout the world, wherever one worships the Father in spirit and in truth, which is a great thing to say, because that means for us here, right now, that's precisely what we're doing, or precisely what he desires that we be. Worshippers who worship the Father in spirit and in truth. He just kind of dismantles the fight between Jews and Samaritans by saying that he himself is the one who's going to change everything. And how do we know that? Well, her last card to play is, okay, great, whatever you say, I know the Messiah is coming. When he comes, you know, he'll tell us what we need to know. That's the last card she has to play in her evasion. And Jesus says, I, the one speaking to you, am he. I am the Messiah. I am the one who's come. I am the one who's going to change everything from spirit and in truth. And what gives him credibility in that statement is the fact that he told her everything about her life. He knows her. He knows her. This is the truth of the Messiah for us. Is that who Jesus is someone who knows us inside and out, someone who will not let us evade the truth that's posed to us. He will not let us get focused on the earthly things when he desires to be focused on that which we cannot see. And he does so all within the dignity of coming to us and having that conversation, speaking to us, engaging with us, encountering us. This relational aspect of Jesus, I think, is so important in the Gospel of John, but so important for understanding of the Christian faith. We do not follow a sage who's walking around the countryside in sandals, like many cartoons like think of Jesus, and throwing out little proverbs of how we can kind of have a good life. He's relational. He eats with people. He has conversations with them. And this changes her in a way that doesn't always change, but it changes her such that she goes back into the community in which she has been ostracized and says, I just met someone who knows everything about me. To which they could all have said, we all know everything about you. But they listen this time. It's just remarkable. She is someone who at this point now has gone from evading to actually being able to speak publicly in a community where she's been maligned, likely, and say, he knows me. He knows me inside and out. And it says that many of the Samaritans believed in him because of her testimony. I mean, this doesn't happen. There's no good reason for them to believe this, apart from the fact that she is describing a story that is so off the wall. A guy comes to a well to talk to her when he shouldn't even be around her at all, tells her everything about her life, such that she gives witness to that, and they want to hear more. And then they go, and then they say to her, "We no longer believe just because of what you've said to us. Now our eyes have seen it as well. We've heard for ourselves, and we really know that this man is the Savior of the world." And I don't want to go so far as saying this is like the first church, but it seems that way. That you have people who didn't know, who come to faith, and yet you now have this coming together of people who may have been living as faithful lives as they could, and now with an ostracized woman, and they become part of a community of faith together. Where regardless of where you've been or what you've done, you've been brought together into this beautiful truth of who Jesus is and what he's intending to do in us. And it begins to unfold in a powerful way. Why? Simply by virtue of a conversation. The dignity that Jesus shows to her to come have a conversation with her. The ability of Jesus to have her focus on something far deeper than just earthly realities. To tell the truth about who she is, to tell her, "No, that I know you, and you need to be okay with me knowing you, because until you know that you're known this much, you'll have no desire to know me in return." And that fourth, because of him, the Messiah is tending to change everything, that the old fights will go away, and new realities will emerge by the truth of the gospel. It requires truth. And yet, what unfolds is also remarkably grace. Friends, those two can't be separated. This is why Jesus came from the Father, full of grace and truth. The remarkable grace that Jesus shows to her and the truth that he speaks to her begins to change a community through her. I think that's just pretty cool. May we unfold in the same way, to allow Jesus to speak to us in the same way, and then model our own conversations likewise, such that we show people dignity in the midst of a conversation to say that we are not polluted by their presence in our lives, because if that were the case, we would be polluting them as well. And that maybe we have the relationships to talk about much more deeper things than simply surface stuff. How are you really doing? And then to be the kind of Christians who have the courage to say what's true, and to do so knowing that still truth follows with grace, because we follow a Messiah who is Jesus, and that he will hold all things together. Are you allowing yourself to be truly known by him? You can't evade. You may think you can, but he is the one who pursues. I, again, just love conversations that unfold in this way. And thankful for this text of Jesus' dignified yet grace and truth-telling conversation with the Samaritan woman.